Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and we have a very, very special treat for you today.
A very special program.
Yes. One of our most beloved chefs and human beings, actually, is Massimo Bottura of the Osteria Francescana in Modena, Italy, and we have followed his career since we first met him in, 1995?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It was like a third or fourth trip to Italy, I think.
And he just keeps reaping in all the awards justifiably, deservedly, and moving forward his vision. He always has a forward vision. And we interviewed him very recently, and we're going to let you listen to that interview where he talks about a little bit about what we...
But right after that, we're going to do something we don't do very often.
Ever.
In fact, I don't recall we've ever done it before.
But no, I don't think so
either. I certainly realized we have a whole program of Massimo because we had an extensive interview with him back in September 2008, when we visited the then Michelin two-star Osteria Francescana, and essentially Massimo served us lunch.
Yeah.
He brought out every dish and talked to us about it. And then we recorded two extensive segments, which really go one right after the other one, because he had so much to say about his philosophy of food and where his restaurant was going, he hoped, where it had been, where it was going. So it's really about the evolution of a chef. The evolution of a chef who entered the top 50 restaurants in the world at a record number 13.
Well, he's now five.
The next year rose to number four. And this year, I mean, in 2012, he's at number five. Don't be surprised if in 2013 he's back in the top five again. Because with a Michelin third star and a completely remodeled restaurant and kitchen, he's on a roll. And when you hear him in the interview recorded just recently, you'll be amazed at how energetic and how simpatico he is when he talks about his dream for the future based on what he's achieved so far in the past. So, ladies and gentlemen, a whole program with Massimo Bottura. We'll just take one break during the program, and we hope you'll enjoy.
I was just sitting in amazement thinking that our next guest, Chef Massimo Bottura, we've been fans, not only fans, but almost acolytes of this chef and his restaurant, Osteria Francescana, in Modena, Italy, since 1995, Massimo.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
We were just babies.
Just open. Oh, my God. That's great.
You know, the funny thing is, you remember that I was talking to your wife earlier on today, and she said you sold the red Ferrari painting to the Ferrari family.
Oh, yeah. No, we sold it. Yeah, because, you know, we struggled for so many years. And, you know, but everything is changing. It's not about things that have to stabilize, but it's like moving. What I'm always saying in my future is going to be future again. Because when you do research, you do research. Also, your mind is changing, and if you want to be contemporary, you have to be contemporary in your life more than in your food and in everything. After that, everything comes up and is going to evolve and be part of your life.
Now, we saw you last, I think it was 3 years ago or 4 years
four
ago.
4 years ago, I think.
And did a long interview with you. And
4 years ago, yes.
Yeah, but we talked about the fact that the first time that we met, you were talking about opening a restaurant in New York. What we didn't know then is what you were talking about was that people in Italy didn't appreciate what you were doing in your kitchen, but in New York you thought they might.
Yeah, there was a very struggling period, you know, since 2001. And we were very close to open a place in New York or in London. We had the two opportunities, but Lara convinced me to wait one more year, because otherwise it would be very difficult for me to accept that I couldn't make it where I was born. And 6 months later, all these different prizes they arrive, and everything changed. So it's like an incredible message to the young chef, just to believe in dreams and keep going. Also, when all the others they say you cannot make it, just go on if you're really trust in yourself. And it's an incredible method for the young.
Yes. Now you have your original restaurant now has 3 Michelin stars, and you also have a more casual place, Francescata 58.
Exactly. Yes.
You have in addition to your
Villa Manodori, yes.
In addition to your Michelin stars, you are ranked right at the top in the top 5 of the best restaurants in the world. And you are in the country, in the U.S. here, representing as an ambassador for food for the USA's Italian Year of Culture.
Yeah. It's very important. Also, 2 years ago, the town of Modena, they gave me, after the prize I received in Paris, as the best chef of the year by the World Academy in Paris, they get a gold medal. So it's quite an honor for me, you know, that usually in when you do such a, I don't want to say avant-garde, but evolving food, evolving research, evolving things, also in music, everywhere, you're never recognized where you live. And so receive a gold medal that you are alive, it's great. It feels great.
Oh, sure. You know? I mean, there's so much about you that is essential Italian.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Even though you are not the same style of Italian that was viewed as a regional Italian, which most people know, but you've evolved constantly. So looking back is probably not appropriate because you're always looking forward.
Absolutely, because I'm always saying that my cuisine is seen from 10 kilometers of distance. So you taste the territorio, so you taste the better of the Parmigiano Reggiano, the balsamic vinegar, culatello, or prosciutto di Parma, but you don't see as usual the shape that you've seen. And also, I decide in the last menus to create a tasting also of traditional food. So you can arrive from all over the world and you choose traditional, territorial, or avant-garde. So it's your choice.
Because I want to show. Right.
Yeah. I want to show everyone like that. Before going abstract, you have to know exactly how to draw. And then you paint, and then you go in abstract.
Yeah. But now,
so that's very important.
But now, if we came, what would we eat? What do you think we would do?
You can eat, I don't know, some slice of 42 months culatello and mostarda, and then 5 different age parmigiano in 5 different texture and temperature.
Yeah, I love that one.
Beautiful tagliatelle al ragù, that's Bolognese style, but in a very, very classic new wave with no fat, because I really think that the food for the future has to be good first and healthy second, then all the rest, but good and healthy. These are the 2 words that are driving me to the new plate, new creation for the future.
Now, you're always independent, Massimo. Now you got your 3rd Michelin star, and then you promptly closed your restaurant for renovations. Who does that? Not many people.
No.
So, and we were talking a little bit ago. Tell us what this new restaurant's like.
It's like, I always think one thing. When everyone says something popular, you're like, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this. I'm doing the opposite.
Yes.
Because I'm sure it's the right way to think. Because it's like this. Everyone is saying, oh, now you have the 3 star. Don't touch anything. Don't do this. Okay. Don't touch the kitchen. We rebuilt everything. We doubled the space, rebuilt the old kitchen, the wine cellar, the old room, the entranceway. We changed everything.
And you have new art, too, don't you?
Yeah, and the new art. And me and Lara, and my wife, we decided to switch, do this new tasting menu called Come to Italy with Me. And it's all about these beautiful Italian colors, beautiful Italian art, beautiful Italian design, but also switch with American, because it's normal, no? She's American, I'm Italian, so we share idea, we share thoughts, and we share future, right?
Yes, and you love jazz. And I read somewhere that
there's a new compilation.
Uh-huh.
Very different from the big bands of the 20th and 30th.
Uh-huh.
like Duke Ellington, all these kind of big bands with, I love this ancient jazz.
Ancient?
Yeah.
Oh, so that's what you're into now.
I'm into this kind of 20th and 30th that is mixing between jazz of Django Reinhardt and Duke Ellington, between Sidney Bechet and whatever. It's like, I know. This is my time now, after all the avant-garde and...
Oh, well, that's interesting. Duke Ellington's very big in our hometown here. And actually, I did the CD info, the inserts, for a jazz musician who adored Ellington, and I wrote it in the rhythms, the Ellington rhythms. It's kind of interesting. Anyhow, on with this. I think people are interested in some of these. You have so many kind of very personal things about you. Sometimes I could even call them quirky. Tell us about your stories. What does that mean?
It's stories behind each dish are so important because, you know, create a good dish, a good plate is easy for us because we get the ingredients. And we know the technique, and so it's just about the palate. But create a dish that tells a story, a dish that became a social gesture that helps others. It's like totally different way of approaching. Because when all about these prices we got, all these things, yeah, the mixer feels very good, very happy. But if we, that now we have this kind of spotlights, we move the lights to the others, to the artisan, to the cheesemakers, to the farmers, to the fishermen. They help us to get this kind of emotion, transfer this kind of emotion with our plate. It's like sharing happiness. And where we are, the happiness, when it's shared between many people, is much more beautiful than just yourself. You know what I mean?
Well,
it's such a... These plates are like... Really, they became social gestures. They help everyone, as we did for the earthquake, as we did for like a school that is close to Modena, that an agricultural school. They need help, so we create all these dishes. They tell stories. Stories like it can be historical stories, like the eel swimming up the Po River.
Oh yeah,
that is the photograph of the extensive fleet that at the end of the 16th century moved the capital from Ferrara to Modena. So this is the metaphor of the eel that comes to Modena. Or like the bollito not boil. It's like I ask myself questions every time I go in the kitchen. I ask myself questions, and the answer to those questions are my dishes. It's like an architect, like a poet. Why do I have to boil the meat into the water? Because 1,000 years of history is telling me that the meat has to be boiled to create bollito misto. No, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it because I'm in 2013, and I want to preserve vitamin, protein, and organoleptic parts. And since I have this beautiful piece of meat, the bollito misto is the classic dish from north of Italy,
right.
I'm going to do it not boiled. So I'm using the sous vide, low temperature, all these different pieces of meat, and preserving the poetry of this history. So that's another very important thing. You are, every one of us is so obsessed by this incredible life we are living right now. Everything is so quick, so obsessed, that we need to leave some free space for poetry into our life. And if we have the capacity, if we have the feeling, the thing, we need to do that and jump into the poetry, at least for a moment in our days.
I want to ask you a sensitive question, I think, Massimo. You're in the United States right now.
I came back in New York from Washington because yesterday we did a beautiful dinner in the Italian embassy for the year of culture between Italy and the United States.
Uh-huh. But no, let me go on. You travel quite a lot. So you're not always in Modena.
Yes.
People are going to go to Modena, to Osteria Francescana, and they're going to say, oh my God, Massimo's not here. What kind of meal will I get?
Yeah, but it's like when you are and you travel to Modena, there are 26 people there waiting for you. they are working, also the waiting staff is working in the kitchen, so they are, they're going to explain you all beauty and each history of that's behind each dish. And all my chefs are like there to prepare the food like every day in Osteria Francescana for 28 covers. So if you think about the proportion, it's like 26 people for 28 covers. It's amazing.
It is amazing.
And it's not about, for us, it's not about business. It's about dream. You know, business can be the balsamic vinegar, Villa Manodori, can be the olive oil. Now the company is doing very, very well and can support the Osteria Francescana, the dream of Osteria Francescana.
Now, you are out and about with a lot of different chefs from, I guess you also are at Noma, at the Mad Camp,
yes.
Right? What is this like with the great ferment of ideas? I think that it's the first time I've ever known of so many chefs getting together so regularly with different ideas.
This is a great question. This is a great reflection. Kitchen has changed so much for this reason. Because instead of being so selfish, we share so much. I can think about me, René, David Chang, Daniel Patterson, Wiley Dufresne, you know, Claude Bozzi, Alex Atala, Gaston Acurio, Narizawa. So all these friends, all this group of people, they love to spend time together, to share ideas, to share technique, to go to Congress and to teach to young. It's so beautiful. It's so intense, and it's so inspiring.
It has to be intense.
It's amazing, you know, it's amazing.
Well,
and
I think
everything changed.
Yeah, everything it's a unique, a really unique period, I think, in culinary history.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
It is.
So you're already contemplating your next move. I don't even want to ask. I just want to hear about it.
No, I'm going to help the area, this school that we already start with this agricultural school that they are struggling with money and as everything in Italy right now. So I'm helping them to find financing and because I want two different class. They're going to teach cuisine. So like that, the chef of the future is going to grow up close to the farmers, the fishermen, to the cheesemakers, to the wine producer of the future. So if a chef of the future will go in the kitchen with the hand dirty of earth and smell like milk, that was like milking the cows in 4 in the morning to make the Parmigiano Reggiano, they're going to have more respect for the ingredients. So this is my next project. It's like just pushing the school to become better, to stay alive first, to become better, and to teach the new chefs. Because teaching, because school, because studying is the most important thing for the future.
I believe.
Now, here's a tough one for you. Who's the next Massimo Bottura? Who's the next René Redzepi that nobody's heard of?
I don't know. There are so many young chefs that are close to us and they're listening when we are speaking that I don't have an idea. I just try to push the Italians one to keep dreaming because traveling in South America, I saw so many smiling people and hungry people to become the new Alex Atala or the new Gaston Acurio. But this is a very deep thing. In Italy, we have so many centuries, maybe millennium of culture in the back, and so many great chefs we have that I don't know who it's going to be. But it's very difficult because the expression of the moment kind of very hard moment in Italy. Because it's not just an economic, you know, problem. It's just a crisis. It's also a social crisis. And you think about we don't have a government and we don't have even a pope.
I know.
So it's like,
well, you're
going to
have a pope. I heard they're going to start voting on scheduling on Tuesday. And
right,
they must know who it's going to be.
I'm sure after that, as we are so deeply in the involved in faith and, you know, since ever, that there's going to be also some reasonable people that is going to take care of the government, because it's like, this is unbelievable.
I'm not sure about that one. If Berlusconi comes around one more time,
I have to be faithful. Otherwise, it's going to fall up. Otherwise, I'm going to move.
I really feel for you, because I don't know what I would do in Italy with the government as it is now. I just have no idea.
It's unbelievable.
It's just wonderful. It's just wonderful to speak with you again.
Oh, yeah, Massimo.
Thank you so much.
We need to come and see your new restaurant, too.
Oh, please, give me a call, and I'm going to wait with my hand open, and I want to hug you. Hug you and kiss you.
I love you.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay,
bye,
ciao,
guys.
And ciao,
Laura, too. Ciao, tutti. Ciao, tutti.
And we'll be back with Massimo Bottura from September 2008, right after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
On the Menu is now having a really rare opportunity of being able to experience what this genius chef that we adore is doing now, and being able to look back 10 years or so to see how it all started out. And now we're experiencing the resolution. We're at the Osteria Francescana in Modena, and we're talking to Chef Massimo Bottura, who is just one of the nicest guys in the world, and also a genius chef, as I said. Hello, Massimo.
Hi, everybody.
Okay, now, I mean, that's the nicety out of the way. We're now going to talk about what your cooking is all about. You've made a big splash internationally because of your experimental cooking, and when we first came here, you were very involved with experimental techniques. From what we ate for dinner tonight, which was extraordinary, I would cross half a continent again just to have the repeat of the meal. You have two qualities that almost nobody has doing the kind of work you do, and that is at the forefront of all of your work. First off is taste, and second texture, or it might be equal.
Yes, this is one of first of all, I just want to thank you to come back here after 10 years, and you know that I was kind of frustrated 10 years ago about my cuisine and how the journalists and crew and gourmet they really weren't so interested in what I was doing. And now, just 10 years after, you see how everything changed. My cuisine was a set, and now is talking that, and is saying that is part of the major part of the new Italian cuisine, or new tradition, however you want to call it. I start since a long time ago experimenting and working on traditional element and traditional products, just because you know, I always believed in really short range of kilometers to, and have a really close relationship with the people they were making my ingredients and working with my ingredients on as Parmigiano Reggiano, as all the animals and the vegetables. So I took as the idea of work with the shapes and no shapes and deconstruct and change the texture and understand what the Parmigiano would be, working with Parmigiano crust or suckling pig. They were fed till they became like 38, 39 pounds instead of 24, 20, but just fed with milk. So just an important step into the products. That's the major part. As I usually say, what has to be, and relating what you asked before, your sensation of your feeling of texture, is just because I have always an image in my mind. This image is the pyramid of Kandinsky. So in the spirit of the art in the book, Kandinsky will say that this is like the society. I say this is like my mind and my creativity. The point, the maximum, the higher point of this pyramid is my thought, is my level of thinking. And under that, there are ingredients and technique. But the technique for the ingredients, not the technique just to be like a magician. And just to use the right technique for the right ingredients. Under that, all my experience, my feelings, my what I grew up with. So this this incredible feeling that I want to transmit as the work with the embryonal eggs that I mentioned you before when we were at the table. So this is the major part. Being really focused on this and being really focused on what I'm like the products and the ingredients at the end, you're gonna have and you're gonna find and you're gonna know when stop and when you have to stop to use the technique and be in the soul of the ingredients.
I want to make sure that we're spelling, that everybody understands that Massimo's name is B-O-T-T-U-R-A. My sloppy pronunciation said Bottura, and it's Bottura. Massimo, I think it might be, if somebody is not eaten here, difficult to imagine how not only imaginative and beautifully presented but flavorful your food is. Is there some way you could take one dish and explain what you do? Especially you do deconstruction, I know. We had so many dishes tonight. I'm sure you could find one that really represents the kind of food you produce.
I would love to present the five different aged Parmigiano in five different texture and temperature. But for an American idea and to honor you and my wife, because she's American too, I would love to explain how I took the Caesar salad and I put it in a different level. Dunque, I always hated the Caesar salad as this bland salad that was like mixed with all this heavy preparation. So I just took the aromatic part. So anchovies, yolk, parmigiano, and mustard. So I took these elements and I rebuilt a salad with this element. So I start researching all the mustard leaves, starting from the French one, the Chinese one, the white one, the Italian one, and all these fresh herbs that are delivered like every 2 days in my restaurant. I mix these leaves of mustard with other aromatic salads, aromatic leaves that they gives to give a balance of this salad. So after that, I make the Parmigiano. I create some gallette of Parmigiano, so they're really crunchy. And this Parmigiano Reggiano crumbs I put in the middle of the salad to give the texture and the sound in the palate. Instead of using oil, I use the anchovies water that comes from Sicily. So just because I didn't want to use oil, because I believe in chewy the fresh salad, chewy the fresh aromatic herbs, gives you an incredible feeling in the palate. And I finish everything with shaving on the top of this salad embryon eggs that I kept under salt and sugar, and let them sit in the air as a bottarga to concentrate all the flavor of the yolk that is inside the embryos. And then in front of the customer, I shave it as Parmigiano. So like this, I finish everything with a touch of Villa Manodori balsamic vinegar and the pancetta, crunchy pancetta, to just to say this is Emilia Romagna, to remind that we are in Modena. So this is like the idea of taking a plate and take it and bring it to another level.
I'd like for you to do one more. I actually have two more I want you to do. The next one is the bollito that's not boiled.
Yeah, bollito misto non bollito. So it's like really traditional in north of Italy. This is very complicated because everything starts from the shape of this. I'm starting from the shape. I was sitting in Central Park, in the park just in front of 59th Street. And I was looking all these buildings, like a skyscraper landscape, with all the trees on the bottom. So it's like a landscape with the trees on the bottom. So you have this idea of a landscape of the trees. So what I did is... So remind this landscape, okay, most of the people they knows. Remind this. My question was, why do I have to boil such a great ingredients that I have just let him boil and lose all the vitamins and the flavor into boiling water? Starting from this question, because I had all these producers and farmers, they were sending me chianina belly for like to try. If you saying, okay, I have a chianina, incredible chianina raised like this. So just I'm sending you the belly. Try to do whatever you want, which is beef. Or like a fasona, also beef, no? But it's from Piemonte, and is raised over 2,000 meters, free range, like eating wild herbs and stuff like that. So imagine the meat, how it is like. So I will start thinking about this with all these pieces, like cheek, tongue, tails, belly. And I start thinking that using the technique and pass through the really avant-garde technique could help me to give the right feeling and the right feeling and texture to this incredible quality meat. So what I did is like divide all the different meats in vacuum packed sous vide and cook at low temperature for different timing. at the end, it's like a cubist, like a cubist dish. Like Solk is a cubism, instead of relating to the figure, is relating to the timing. So, I create this dish thinking about the timing and the texture, and at the end the shape I had to give to this dish is becoming thinking about the shape. I cut all the different pieces in cubes. Cubes are figure, like rectangles, and that one close to the other, they gave you the idea of skyscraper. On the bottom, because bollito misto, not boil, is served with salsa verde. It's like chopped parsley and sauce of yellow and red pepper. So I create two lines of red pepper and yellow pepper in front of the meat, and an air of parsley to be really clear with the flavors. I add this feeling on the, in my mind, the image of the skyscraper in New York, sitting in the park, just in the back of 59th Street.
Oh, Peter wants to say something here.
I don't feel like I'm sitting in the back of 59th Street, but I have to tell you that Massimo talked about the texture of the dish, but the other wonderful thing about it is that it has mouthfeel, which is one thing the bollito misto generally does not have. And then to go one step further, this is a restaurant with a great wine program, but guess what we drank with this dish? We drank Belgian style beer made in Italy. So the wonderful thing about being here at La Serena Francescana is that they don't stop thinking. They start every day thinking, and who knows what they'll think of next, but we're just going to take a short break.
We're talking to Massimo Bottura, and he's describing some of his extraordinary dishes. I'd like, Massimo, for you to do one that almost everybody will probably understand or relate to, which is your pasta fagioli.
Pasta fagioli is another classic dish that we have in Italy, so pasta and beans. So I grew up with this kind of dish, so to me it's really, really important, as you said and you mentioned before about flavors. I can work and play with this kind of dishes, but the flavor at the end has to remind you to your past, to your memories. This is very important. And because like this, I can transfer my memory, my experience to other people and give emotion. This is, so this dish is becoming a compression in a small glass to have, few bites, just to remind how is pasta fagioli, how could be a pasta fagioli. So to me, it's like I start these dishes is divided in seven different techniques. I start like creating a creme royale at the bottom of this glass with using beans, just a little of fat as pancetta, and some foie gras. I simmer everything and I cook at low temperature. Over this, I put some radicchio because I need some bitter things to clean the palate. So I create this, and the radicchio is really traditional in pasta fagioli in the north of Italy, like Veneto. So I braise the radicchio, just the interior part, not the whole leaves, just the interior, and so I got this bitterness. On the top of radicchio, there are little cubes of pancetta that are really crunchy. On the top of that, instead of using pasta, because pasta e fagioli, and make the mal tagliati, cioè bad cut, I took the Parmigiano Reggiano crust that are boiling with beans to give flavor to the beans, And I let him cook, let him boil with fagioli, let him sit for a while to lower the temperature. I slice with the slicing machine, and as a pasta, as handmade pasta, so really thin. And I gave the shape of maltagliati. So you're gonna eat maltagliati, or you're gonna eat, crust of Parmigiano boiling instead of pasta. On the top, I create a cream of fagioli to remind of pasta e fagioli. And at the end, just a light air of rosemary, because in pasta fagioli, the rosemary is really intense. And I don't like it so intense. So I create an air that is disappearing in your mouth. So you're going to eat deeply. You dip the spoon into the bottom of the of this glass, and you come back with the old feeling of pasta fagioli.
Listeners, I hope you're getting the impression that this is sort of a rather unique place. Now, 8 years ago when we were here, we were interested because Massimo said he was excited about the fact that later that year he was going to go spend 3 months at El Bulli in Spain. We haven't talked to him a lot about what that experience is like, but I have a more open question, and you can perhaps relate to whether Ferran Adria, whether you learned anything special. How do you keep on coming up with these new ideas?
Coming up with new ideas is not simple to answer. The impression of I always say that Ferran took me to another level. You know, I had experience with tradition and French cuisine before. I read a lot, so I already had an idea of what was going on and using these siphons and this. I grew up in a family that the cuisine is very important, and imagine at the Sunday lunch serving 17 people every Sunday. So I know it was like a restaurant. And my mom she's a great cook, so I took a lot from them. But Ferran, and my wife, I think they are the most important people for me because they conceptualized my cuisine. So Ferran, he teach me how to work with that. He went deep into some techniques. Start working with different and think about creating plate with acidity and sugar and so stimulate the palate. And my wife I think is really, really important because she goes deeply into the dish and ask me question, why did you do this? Why did you use this technique? Always why. And I have to answer, and this make me think. And if you think, you can create a really important thing.
Now, you have another more casual venture, and you also have a line of products. Would you like to tell us what those are?
Yeah, this is a business, a kind of a business, because you know, for me, business is always something that I took from my family, and so this balsamic vinegar, because you know I'm from Modena, and during 1996, an American journalist called Faith Willinger and Mario Batali. They were eating here, and they were thinking, and we were talking and discussing the problem of finding a good balsamic vinegar for chefs. So I said, maybe I can do something for this, and I create a line of product after like 15 years. Now it's a line of product. At the time, it was just a balsamic vinegar, like artigianale. I gave I named Villa Manodori. That is an old villa that the family own on a outside of the in the country that my sister husband family owns, and like that I create this line for chef, thinking about chefs, and the product are really perfect to be matched with beef juice, fish, or everything, because they have the right texture. You know, the problem for me is like traveling all over the world and find balsamic vinegar reduction. To me, they blow. It blows my mind. You know, for a product like mine that is the age for years and years, think about reduction in a pan is like a disaster. So, I decide in that that I remember beautiful dinner. Beautiful night, I decide to create this line of product that I name Villa Manodori, and now there is Essenziale Oils. They're all products that are experienced, and they came and they arrive from the experience of my cuisine.
How does one get this?
In United States, they're like distributed by the Medici. It's a beautiful company that they're really into the high quality products all over Europe, France, Spain, Italy, like that. And they're really nice guys. And for the people, I think William and Sonoma, they carry that, Dino and De Luca, Whole Food, you know, they're like becoming kind of big. It's became.
And what about this more casual wine bar?
3 years ago, me and my sommelier, Giuseppe Beppe, we decided to create a wine bar because to introduce the product and the taste and to educate the palate of young crowds in Modena and all over. So we try to be cheap and to involve a young crowd to start to educate palate to eat the right prosciutto, the right culatello, the right meat, and so and keep everything really compressed, because you know at Ozzeria Francescana we have 12 people in the kitchen for 30 people serving, so the prices, you know, they're like they have to be, they're not affordable for everyone, so we try to do that.
Well, you are so extraordinary. I just have to ask you, because you're always thinking, always creating, what do you envision is next?
Next, I don't know. I just, I don't know. I have a dream, you know, for someone like me that is not born into a restaurant. It's just passion, you know, that became and grow. To me, like maybe the third star Michelin is a dream. Now I have two, and who knows what's gonna be next? Could be also that I start thinking and taking consideration of open something around the world. You know, maybe New York, maybe Singapore. Now I just received a brochure with a beautiful tower in Singapore and offer me the last two floors to open a restaurant as Osteria Francescana. Who knows?
Listeners, it all might sound a little bit complicated. In fact, Massimo is showing Anne pictures of a new skyscraper in Singapore, and somehow it's hard to imagine Osteria Francescana somewhere other than on the corner of a little street in Modena that you could drive by if you didn't know it was here. But here's the last point that I wanted to make, and then I'll ask Anne to wrap up. It all might sound a little bit intimidating because The food is very extraordinary. The chef is very extraordinary. What you have to understand is what is on your plate, dish after dish after dish, is the most delicious food you are ever going to taste. So even if you're not interested in the presentation, when it comes in your mouth, it explodes, and you'll be delighted. Now, Wayne, what do you have to say about that?
Well, of course, I thoroughly agree. I want to say that this man has so many dimensions. He also has an art collection, and it's something I'm very sensitive about, that you could die for. He has such a great eye. And his dishes, of course, are beautiful. But he also has his restaurant is so tasteful. It's an ambience that you would love to be in, and everybody who comes in here is somebody you might even want to talk to because they're all of the same ilk. They love good food. They have good taste. They love a beautiful ambience. Would you like to say one more thing to our listeners, Chef?
No, just that, you know, I just want to say to the young guys, they really want to be a chef, that it's really hard, but it's very important. They believe in dream, and they live their life as a dream. So like that, one day you can become a chef, and you can maybe the dream they're gonna be is gonna be a reality. You know that I say this because as I mentioned, they were reminding me that I was 10 years ago. I was saying that maybe I was opening a restaurant in New York. I said that because you know, the critic and the journalist, they were really interested in what I was doing, and they considered me like a crazy guy who ruined the products. And now, you know, now they said I'm, you know, as you know. So be strong, believe in your dream, and one day maybe they're going to be reality.
We love this guy, and I think you will too. So listeners, come. Again, it's Massimo Butera, and it is the Osteria Francescana in Modena, which is in the province of Emilia-Romagna, Italia. Grazie, Chef.
Thank you to everyone.
It's so nice to be around Massimo. It's a real thrill, and it's also very gratifying to see somebody so deserving, so much talent and ability and thoughtfulness rise to the top of the heap here.
Well, the important thing, I think, is the most remarkable thing about him, really, aside from the fact that he's a tremendously nice guy and once again proves that nice guys can finish first, is the extent to which he keeps on exploring.
Yeah, he keeps on changing.
He's always looking forward. He's always looking at another aspect of the restaurant and the food business.
And let's not forget, he's always supported by his wonderful wife.
Yeah, but he's making this immense contribution to this agricultural school that's right nearby, and he created his own line of olive oils and vinegars. Which he says makes a whole lot more money than Osteria Francescana. I don't know. Perhaps you didn't notice that one going through because it's a small part of the interview, but it's an interesting part of the whole man. And the thing that he's proudest of, the most amazing thing, the thing that he's proudest of is his gold medal that they struck and gave to him, when he won a special best chef in Europe or something like that award in Paris. A few years back, he thought it was the most important recognition, more important than 3 Michelin stars and fourth in the top 50 restaurants in the world. Feeling like hometown boy does good was a tremendous fillip for him. And we're going to go see him again. You can anticipate hearing Massimo again on our program, I feel sure. And I promise you, just like you won't be this time, you won't be the least bit bored. You'll just be fascinated by this truly remarkable man of the food. Right, sweetheart?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll be back with you same time, same place next week. And in the meantime, take care.
Bye-bye.